Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome back to Mads World. I'm your host Mads and I hope you've been enjoying season 10 of the podcast so far. If you've been enjoying the show, please remember to subscribe on your favorite listening platform. Leave me a rating or a review. It's the simplest way to help out the show. Massive shout out to Beck, partner this week, who made the sweetest review video ever on her TikTok. Please go and give her a follow and check it out. It's at Beck Partner, BECPUTNA. This week I'm joined by ADHD coach and content creator, Charlotte Forbes. Like many others, Charlotte discovered she had ADHD via learning about it from TikTok following the pandemic. She now coaches people to help them better understand themselves and creates content to entertain and educate people about ADHD on adhdclub.co.uk and on her socials. When she's not banging on about ADHD or oversharing, she likes collecting hobbies and arts and crafts. We actually used to work together and she's a huge legend. Our chat is so much fun and I seriously learned so much. Charlotte is in the lead up to 10,000 followers on TikTok, so please do go and give her a follow. She also has a new course on confidence and ADHD starting on the 5th of Feb, so please get in touch with her via TikTok if you'd like to sign up. In this episode, we discuss the importance of self-compassion, obviously Charlotte's funniest dating stories, her journey to becoming an ADHD coach, how ADHD typically impacts relationships and dating experiences, her best tips and advice on dating someone with ADHD, and so much more. I have to flag for this episode, neither of us are doctors, and if you do think you have ADHD, please go and speak to your GP and follow the normal process to get diagnosed. Don't diagnose yourself on TikTok. It's not the right way to go about it. Hello, Charlotte.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. It's 8 o'clock in the morning, so of course I rolled out of bed and have just arrived with my ginger tea, thanks to my hot water tap. So yeah, really good to be here. How are you?
I'm good. The episode's sponsored by tea because I'm about to be having my nighttime tea as well. We've swapped time zones, so I'm back in Melbourne and you're currently in London, which is really fun. You and I actually met because we were working together, was it a couple of years ago now, I guess, at a media agency, which is super fun. But now we're both just high-powered business, gatekeep, girl boss, gaslight girlies doing our own thing. So
don't know about gaslight girlies, but yeah, girl bosses. Yeah, it's super exciting.
Yeah.
And yeah, like working in media is fun, but also doing your own thing is much more fun. So yeah, super excited. And it's nice to kind of like when passions align of different things like podcasts and ADHD and dating and all of those things. So super excited.
Yeah, it's such a great fit for the pod. So let's get stuck into our speed date question round, which is some fun upfront questions so everyone can get to know you a bit better before we chat all about ADHD and dating and ADHD and women, because you are an ADHD coach. But my first question is, what is your favorite pop culture moment ever?
Oh, so mine has to be the evolution of Paris Hilton. So like everyone thought that she was just like, ditzy, blonde, blah, blah, blah. And then she released an amazing book, which has loads of stuff on ADHD. And now advocates for the rights of troubled teens in the US. And basically she like was like, yeah, I played ditzy because you all thought I was, but actually I've made billions off of you. So absolutely love the evolution of Paris Hilton. And I need to do two. Also Britney in 2007, just because it was such a moment of the time, and like kind of feel bad laughing it at the time, but like I really had a mantra, which is like, if Britney can survive 2007, you can survive this day for a long time. So that's something that has grounded me over the years.
That's amazing. And you know what? I love that you said the Paris Hilton thing, because there's so much online as well where like and like you and I are both huge TikTokers, because obviously you've got your ADHD coaching TikTok work and I'm just a massive TikTok addict, if I'm honest. But there's lots on there about you'll see Paris being approached by paparazzi back in the day, and she'll be talking normally with her friends, like in just a normal voice. And then as soon as she turns to the pap, she'll put on this vocal fry, which is like this, "Hi, how are you?" It's like really Californian, and it's sort of like this ditzy thing that loads of people adopt when they're, I don't know, it's so weird to see like the switch up, and then you're like, how did we not know? Like, how did everyone, we all just fell for it, and she's actually just a smart businesswoman just like us.
Yes, I love it. And I love that everyone was laughing at her, but she was laughing harder because she was making so much money. And I just was like, yes, that's so good. So that's probably my favorite, and she's so smart.
So cool. And in interviews now as well, like I've seen her, I can't remember what it was on, but it was Graham Norton or something, but seeing her get interviewed now, you're like, oh, this is like a really intelligent woman, and this is all like her plan and her personal brand and like this empire that she's built just based on like the idea that is instilled by the patriarchy that like, oh, women like that are so dumb, and it's just playing into that role, but she's just played the game. Like, it's so good.
Yeah, you have to read the book.
I really should. Yeah.
It's so good. My friend Brian's actually got it in Melbourne. So maybe that was my copy. So maybe I could get him to like drop it around.
Love that. Oh, that's so good. So my next question is, tell me about a failure or a moment in your life that taught you something valuable.
I would say I got fired/ didn't pass my probation/ let go from 3 jobs in a row, but then it landed me a really good job. So my first job, I was a PA, which you can imagine with ADHD was an absolute disaster. Like, I
admin
was so
queen over here.
Didn't like diary management, dyslexic, but like actively bad at diary management. Working for this startup, and I was fine for like the first 6 months where I was really keen and on it, and they're like, she's so keen, she's so on it, like good at social stuff, but yeah, didn't work out. And then second job, I was working at an ad agency in Melbourne, which was just a horrible toxic workplace to work at, and that I like basically like 6 people signed off a press ad that didn't have the address of the store on, but like I got blamed for it. But and then the next one was one where they didn't sponsor me for a visa, but like actually now looking back, like I wouldn't have wanted to work at any of those jobs for any longer than I needed to. So
yeah,
I'm really glad that I got fired. And also like going through that, like even though, you know, being in like secure jobs, like you're always worried about getting fired if you make mistakes. But like, I felt like, okay, well, I literally got fired like 3 times in a row. So I've gone through that. So felt much better at other jobs. So probably getting fired a lot taught me a lot.
And I feel like that learning experience as well, it must have taught you about what you don't want out of a job. And especially when you start working for yourself and being self-employed, which is something that I'm really, really recently now doing it, it's really like you kind of think, oh wow, I can really work any way that I choose to, and anyone who comes on board, we can decide that, and that we don't have to adhere to traditional structures of working that are built for pre-COVID times and built to benefit men and like all these different things. I'm like, oh, well, we can just do whatever we want, and I know exactly how I like to work because I've like put in the hard work, you know, for other companies in the past. So I guess that must have been a good learning experience about what you don't want to do.
Yeah, for sure. And it was very like parallel to like, you know, when you get broken up with by a bad boyfriend and you're so upset at the time, and then you're like, oh my God, I didn't even like him. Yeah,
literally.
Like, he's such an idiot. Why was I like so upset about that? Whereas actually it's like exactly the same thing where I'm like, I didn't even enjoy that job. But
yeah,
like,
don't
it's
even
just
like
the,
it.
Like, but that's an RSD that we'll get into this later in the episode. Mm-hmm. But there's a thing called rejection sensitive dysphoria, so like any kind of rejection is like physically painful for someone with ADHD, so that like a job rejections can be as painful as an actual breakup.
I'm really excited to hear about it, because I haven't spoken about this much on the podcast before, but I was actually diagnosed with ADHD last year. So it's something that people have always said to me my entire life, oh, you're so ADHD, or that was like, are you sure you don't have it? And I'm like, yeah, whatever, I mean, it's probably fine. It's not impacting me. But then I think it kind of spiraled to the point where it was impacting a lot of aspects of my life and my mental health. And then since figuring it out, it's just completely changed my life. But I definitely think RSD is something that impacts me so much, because when the control gets taken from you and you're like, oh God, wait, I didn't even like him. But what do you mean he doesn't like me and he doesn't want to be with me? I don't like that. Like, it's sort of like, yeah, I can completely relate. So buzzing to chat about that later on. And my next question is, if you could have a heart-to-heart with your younger self, what would you say to her?
This one was hard because this is also my therapy homework this week. So
stop!
got to write a letter to my younger self.
What?
It's really sad. So I would say, like, you're just trying your best and that's all you can do.
Yeah.
And it's fucking okay to make mistakes and basically, like, you're amazing and you will find people who also think that you're amazing and we're all just trying our best and no one is perfect, and that will be like the main message. And also, like, everyone is figuring it out as well. So, like,
yeah,
you know, you can compare yourself to others and you think, oh, that person's like better than me because they remember their peak it, but actually, like, they might have their own insecurities. Yeah. And everyone comes from their own context. So yeah, basically we're all just trying our best and that's okay. Is the main message. But yeah, like, no one is perfect.
I love that so much. And I love that it was your homework for therapy this week, because I was speaking to my therapist recently about compassion-focused therapy. And I think for me, that's something that is so important, because when I ask people this question, you know, if you could write a letter to your younger self, I wouldn't choose my teenage self. I wouldn't choose me in uni. I feel like I had a lot of confidence. I would probably write it to myself a year ago, or maybe even, you know, like my younger self when I was probably 24 to 27, just because it was a hard time for me, like living in London and away from my family. And, you know, it was just like paycheck to paycheck. And, you know, I got quite sick and stuff like through that time. And I think if I could write a similar letter to what you just said, that was really compassion focused and, you know, offers empathy and coming from a place of like self-understanding and self-perception, then that would be what I would do. I feel like when you think of your younger self, you don't give yourself enough slack to think, oh, a year ago I was my younger self. Because you might feel shame about certain things and you don't have compassion for yourself. Like, even a month ago, like, I didn't know what I know now and I feel so hard on myself. But like, she was just learning too. Like, she's just me. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, completely. And I also think that it's like, actually, you know, like going back to like my early 20s when I was like job hopping and didn't really know what I was doing and like was all over the place dating wise and stuff like that. Like, that's kind of because I think it's like again, like with you, like I was super confident. It's like super confident primary school, nightmare secondary school, but like uni, found a good group and like was doing all right. And then you get kind of spat out into the world and you have to figure stuff out. But also your prefrontal lobe only develops fully when you're like, when you're 25. So you kind of make judgments really up till that time. And I didn't know that. So actually, like, realizing that like no one is perfect. Everyone has the same insecurities as you, even when you're like crying in your bedroom watching Girls HBO. Like, there's hundreds of other millennial girls that are crying in their bedroom watching Girls HBO. Yeah. Like actually, it's like everyone's figuring it out and that's okay. Mm. And you don't have to have all the answers all the time. Whereas I think there can be, especially if you're neurodivergent, like this hypervigilance around like, okay, like you have to have your shit together at all time, or you have to be so focused on like remembering all the things, and it takes up so much mental energy. Whereas actually, like, figuring out what you want, figuring out like that everyone's a work in progress, and like iterating each version of yourself so that you can either be like, wow, that was a dumpster fire, I never want to work in that kind of job, or be in that kind of relationship again, or be like, okay, that was awesome, let's keep doing that. But like, just having the compassion that like no one is a finished product and we're all just like mumbling along.
So true. And I love that idea that, like, you know, I've asked people this question before as well, and they're like, oh, I think, you know, I would tell myself to take more risks or something. But things like that, they also do just become a part of your life's work. And it's not like you're going to get to a point where you're like, fixed it, I take the exact right amount of risks. Or like, I fix it, I'm not a huge perfectionist. Or you're not going to ever get to that level that you're completely happy with. It's just something that you're constantly working with until you can get to a place where either you don't think about it, you don't obsess about it, or you're just like comfortable enough that it's not something that comes to the front of your mind. And then by that point, you know, your whole life could have changed and you might have different priorities and a different focus. But you're so right in saying that like it is just an ongoing like piece of work, you know?
Right, Jeremy's just arrived with like breakfast for me.
That's
like,
so cute. Tentatively. if you're listening on audio, Charlotte's been just moved a little egg and a little toast in front of the camera. It's really cute. Bless. That's so cute. So my next question is, and I really love asking this question, especially because the type of guests I have are so diverse. Everyone gives such a different answer, is tell me about a book or a movie that has really impacted your life. So something that you saw and then it became your like Roman Empire, like you think about it all the time, or, you know, the concepts from it or like a quote from it, like bleed into how you approach day-to-day life.
Okay, I'm not going to pick one because it's me.
Okay, you can do whatever you want.
So, 10 Things I Hate About You, yes, it's very mainstream, yes, it's very basic, but it was like the first movie that I watched at a sleepover with my friends, and shout out to the Sasm gang. These are my like five primary school best friends who I'm still friends with now. I just think that seeing someone like Kat Stratford just be herself unapologetically and the world kind of had to move around what she was doing, and she had her sister who was kind of following the path that everyone expected her to, and she was like, okay, I'm doing things my way, and just many, many layers to her, and also Heath Ledger.
So hot, and just so the smile on that man in that film, like when he, I just can't, like that cheeky smile he gives at the lockers, it actually just floors me every time.
Yeah, so I think that film was really formative because there were lots of characters and also lots of lines like, you know, I know you can be overwhelmed and I know you can be underwhelmed, but can you ever just be whelmed? And I'm like, I am whelmed all the time.
Like, can you? Like, yeah, I'm still wondering
just
that.
Whelmed. So, and they're just like, I think you can in Europe. There's loads of quotes. So that one was really formative. And I love that it's based on Shakespeare as well. So like actually the same narratives continue over time, which is super interesting. And it's shot in a real high school and the music and everything. So that was like really, really, really formative for me.
Love it.
And it's probably the only movie that I watched at that time that I could like concentrate for the whole thing because I thought it was magical. And we've all just had that Kat Stratford, especially if you've got ADHD, we've all had that Kat Stratford moment at the party on the table, everyone like egging you on.
Oh, God.
Like, so
my life.
So really that was huge. And then more recently, I know that you read it. Actually it wasn't more recently, I probably read it around the same time. Well, maybe when I was like 18, The Secret History by Donna Tartt. Obsessed with that book. So it starts and it's basically like they only found the body after three days because the snow melted, which I just love. It's also about like groups and cliques and being outsiders, and like Bunny 100% would have had ADHD as well, which actually really upsets me because I've never thought about that. But basically the characters, it's about a group of college kids in this like weird college, and it's kind of a Greek tragedy. People get killed, there's like dark undertones. I've heard it's like Saltburn in many ways, and it's just something that is it, like I can picture the houses, I can picture the college, but like there's no movies or anything about it, but like it just is an amazing story. So me and my mum were like physically fighting the book on holiday because we were both reading it at the same time.
Right. And oh my God, I have the best thing to add to this as well, is that I read all about, because I read it last year as well, like when I was in France, and I was Googling, like you said, why isn't it a movie? Like you can imagine the cast, in the 90s, like, you know, and you'd have all your big dogs, like Leo DiCaprio's in there. You'd have like your Ben Affleck's, your Matt Damon's, like it could have been, the Saltburn of the 90s, right? Like just something like a cultural moment. But apparently they sold, this is what I read on Reddit. So, you know, it might not be true, but it seemed really legit at the time. So Apparently they sold the rights of the movies to someone who was going to make it, but then the person who they sold it to died, and so then they didn't know who owned the rights to make it, The Secret History, into a film. And so then it all just got really, like, there was like this whole legal complication with like who was allowed to make it, and then like all the stars that they wanted to have in it were tied up in other films, like your Leos and your Matts and your Ben Afflecks and whoever. They were all tied up in other deals, so they couldn't do it. And it literally just never got made because of logistical errors. And I was like, guys, sort it out. Like, someone figure out now who owns it. Because imagine, like, wouldn't that just be so good?
Yeah, it's so weird. Also, that's really weird because I just had a really vivid, like, picture of who Henry is in my head. He's one of the main characters. But, like, literally, honestly, they're not, and you don't make up faces in your head as well. So, yeah. Basically, whenever you see someone in a dream, it's someone that you've, like, walked past in the street.
I've heard it's wild
that these people are out there, which, yeah, it's weird. But
it's so weird.
I mean, you can prove it, but sure.
I know. I love just like law like that, that everyone just believes. And it's like, yeah, like things that you hear in primary school and you're like, that's a fact. Like when everyone thought that a dude was a camel's dick in school, and it's like, that's gospel. Like, I better believe that till I die.
Maybe in Australia.
Yeah. It's such an, or like when Marilyn Manson like got two rib cages removed so he could give himself a blowjob. Yeah. Like just common,
that's fact.
Accepted knowledge that is 100% not real.
Yeah, I love
so
that.
Funny. I've got one final question for this round, and it's my favorite question. It's a core staple in Mad's World because this started out as a dating podcast, and it is, what is your funniest date story, your most iconic, your dinner party date story?
Okay. So the way that I met my husband is probably it, and he said that I could share this. So basically, we met in like the January of, I don't know, 2015 or whatever. I met him and we hit it off, but I thought he was like tall, dark, handsome, quite shy. And he was on a gay rowing team with my housemate's friend. So I was
Did you say gay rowing team? Okay.
Yeah. Buckle up. So I was like, okay, he's quite handsome. Didn't really say a word to me all evening, but like, he's one of Mark's rowing friends. He's gay, whatever. Then I went to an Easter lunch and probably had two bottles of red wine to myself. And between this time, he'd been like messaging me on Facebook Messenger. And I was like, okay, he's just like, you know, quite friendly. Cool.
Being a gay bestie. I need new friends.
Yeah, gay bestie. Yeah. And then in a room full of gay men, I used air quotes there, I said, I'm so sexually frustrated, I'm about to rub up against furniture. And Jeremy sent me a message. Yeah. Jeremy sent me a message saying, save your sofa, I can help. And then, yeah.
And when he was there and he heard you say that out loud?
Yeah, on Messenger, on Facebook Messenger, save your sofa, I can help. And I was like, hang on. And then I was like, aren't you gay? And then he was like, not that gay. And I was like, okay, interesting. And then 8 years later, we're married.
No, stop. No, that is the best story I've ever heard. Wait, so that was... Wait, no. Okay, wait. Take a step back. Room full of gay men. Guy that you think is gay and you have a crush on. You announce you want to rub up against furniture because you're feeling sexually frustrated. And then next minute you married him. That.
Yeah, there's a little bit in between, but.
No, that is iconic. That is the most iconic thing I've ever heard. I love that. I'm obsessed with that story.
So good. So that was really funny. It's just really funny to think that, like, that is like, hopefully the story we'll be telling our children.
I literally love that. Is so funny.
And I was like, well.
Well, my question is, what was he doing on a gay rowing team if he wasn't gay? Or was he just there for the vibes? Oh, slay. So we're part of the LGBT community.
Yeah.
Love
that. So that was, that was funny. And then he kind of had to come out to the team and be like, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm dating a woman now. And then, have you met Charlotte? So that was,
good.
Like, it makes me want to vomit to say it, but you, like, just life does take unexpected turns. And
that's
if
so
someone
good.
Had told me 5 years ago when I was crying over boys that I didn't even like, that, like, you know, you're going to meet someone who's amazing and it's going to be in the most unexpected expected circumstances.
Honestly, and we love a bisexual king as well. I keep seeing TikToks because I feel like that is like my type by accident. Like, it's always like, I only like a guy if his sexuality has come into question in a group of people before. And I'm like, that is so true. Like, it just, they just get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and he's also like just the kind of person that like he doesn't like sports. He just no toxic like masculinity.
That's the
like,
whole
he's
thing.
Raised
yes.
by like he's raised in a family where his mum is the main breadwinner, and basically like he does laundry. Like when we first started dating, I had like, well, not even that long, like maybe 3 or 4 months, like basically there were like period knickers in the laundry basket and he soaked them in cold water, and I was like,
oh,
sorry,
my
who
days
is this person?
That's my husband. And,
yeah literally, I was like, sorry, like how does this exist? So yeah, it's just really refreshing to kind of see someone who isn't like like there's so much bad press about men in general, but like honestly, like men who are not like toxically raised in gender roles and everything, and are just, yeah, he's a bit of a unicorn.
It's so good.
And it's yeah. amazing. And it's also like made me question a lot of my own kind of previous prejudices, because actually yeah. I was probably, when we first started going out, I was like, I've got a gay boyfriend, which is really bad to kind of look back at now, whereas yeah. all my friends were like, Charlotte, he's amazing, you're being really mean.
Yeah. And it's just like internalized, like stigmatizing, like it's like that what would the term be? I guess it's sort of like when you have to challenge your own beliefs on things and you're like, why do I even feel like that? Like, what's that even based on? Like, what has influenced my weird...
Well, if you think of like Sex in the City, like there's an episode, yeah. there's a whole episode where Carrie dates a bi guy and it's a big mm-hmm. joke, and it's like, actually, you know, people's sexualities aren't black and white. And
yeah,
I'm really glad that the narrative is changing on that. But
so true.
But yeah, it's honestly 10 times better than any straight guys
I've been out
with.
I'm so happy for you. It's so lovely. And he's brought you a delicious egg and a little piece of toast, so we love to see it.
Yeah, he bakes as well, so he's
a king.
Good one. He is.
Oh, so good. I always love a good positive date story that ends in M's happily, because there's so many on here and all of them are also my own that don't end that way. But I'd love to know, so I've invited you on the podcast because you have become a little bit of an entrepreneur and you've become an ADHD coach, since we last worked together, which is so exciting. And it's been awesome to see your journey on TikTok, and you're in the lead up to 10,000 followers, talking about ADHD tips and some really cool videos that I've found really interesting, especially because I was diagnosed with ADHD last year. So I'd just love if you could explain more about what led you to become an ADHD coach and like how that journey went. So like what sort of qualifications and training you have to get, like just talk me through the whole journey, because I'm super fascinated and I'm sure everyone listening, if you have ADHD, or if you're wondering if you might have ADHD, or you have a friend that's been diagnosed, yeah, I think it's something that's being talked about a lot lately. So yeah, I'd just love to know more about the journey.
Yeah, so like many people, kind of either tail end of the pandemic, you know, 2021 or that kind of pandemic time, I downloaded TikTok and was spending a lot of time on TikTok, and basically I kind of got onto the ADHD side of TikTok, and at first I was like, yeah, can't concentrate, me too, whatever, like was very flippant about it. But then it all just got a little bit close to home, and it was like, can't concentrate, forget your things, poor memory, very emotional, like struggle with focus, like either go from like super productive or like a sloth. And I was just scrolling for hours and hours. I was like, wow, this is actually really close to home. I should probably do some research into that. And then I, in very ADHD fashion, then read 6 books on it in like a week.
The hyper focus though.
The hyper focus. I was like, sorry, what? So my whole personality is described in a list of symptoms. Like, what the actual... I was like, hang on. Someone's having me on here. Like, this can't
yeah.
be... So, I had that realisation. And then basically, I have the joy of being quite A-type with ADHD. So I went to my doctor with basically, like, the case for Charlotte's ADHD. So I looked up the DSM-5 criteria, which is, like, the global criteria for ADHD. Mm-hmm. Did a test so that you can do self-diagnosis tests where you get an ASRS score to say that you've got ADHD. And I went through all of the criteria and wrote this massive Google Doc, which has notes from my childhood as to why I have ADHD.
Oh, my
so
God.
I went to my doctor and he said, "You're terrifying and I think that you have ADHD." he was amazing, and he also thought that he has ADHD, because I'd have an appointment at like 4 o'clock and he'd call me at 9 p.m. and be like, "Hey, your appointment was at 4, but I'm calling you now." So yeah, basically I then got referred to through a scheme called Right to Choose. Yeah, so you can get a private diagnosis paid for by the NHS, and I went through clinical partners who I really, really recommended, and then got my full diagnosis. I was really lucky. When I say lucky, I was the biggest Karen in the world to my GP, to the point where they were like...
At least you can admit it. At least you're self-aware.
I got my elbows out and basically was like, yeah, they were like, "She's so annoying, we're going to make her go away." So they gave me my referral. They told me they'd give me my referral. They then hadn't. I then had to go in and sit with the doctor while he did it, because he definitely has ADHD. And then I got referred and diagnosed within about 6 months, which is super quick.
Yeah.
And then they said I had a 2-hour long appointment with a psychiatrist who went through like all my... So something to note if you are listening to this and you think that you might have ADHD, is ADHD isn't differences of attention that develop in later life. So you have to have always been like it. So like when I was 7, they used to blow the whistle in the playground and all the kids had to stand still and I would carry on running around. I've always interrupted people. Yeah. I've always forgotten my PE kit. In my secondary school reports, they were like, if she concentrated, she could do well. Like, it has to be peppered throughout your childhood.
And like being sent out of class as being a point of distraction for other people, literally, yeah, my life.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So yeah, so it has to have happened your whole life, whereas what people, some people think is like, I can't concentrate, maybe I have ADHD, whereas it has to be like everyone can't concentrate a little bit sometimes now and then, whereas if it's, for example, losing your possessions, I lose my possessions 3 times a day every day. So in isolation, like losing your possessions could be a symptom of poor memory, which is a symptom of ADHD. But does it happen to you all day, every day? And that is the difference between people who sometimes can't concentrate. But what if you can't concentrate, you have a job application due, or you can't concentrate and you have overdue bills and you're getting fined and you still can't concentrate? That is ADHD. So when people have like, oh, everyone's a little bit of ADHD, it's like, yes, everyone is, but it's not consistent throughout your whole life and every day.
Yeah.
So that's kind
and I
of
guess
one
that's
thing
the,
to know.
The same with things like depression. It's like if you're, you know, everyone gets a little bit sad, or everyone, you know, can feel depressed sometimes, but when it becomes something that's like impacting your day-to-day life and it is something that impacts you most days or every day, that's when you know it's something that you need to address.
Yeah. So so I watched loads of TikToks, read loads of books, got my diagnosis, and then it's kind of like, very millennial of me, it's kind of like you're a wizard, Harry, and you're like, okay, cool.
Now what? Yeah.
So I know now that I can't concentrate, and I know that all of my problems are in somewhat related to ADHD, and I know that actually me being chatty and creative and all of the things that I like about myself, that's also ADHD. And you have this huge identity crisis of like, what is me? What is ADHD?
Yeah, like what's my personality versus, you know, other parts about me?
Yeah. So kind of went through that journey. Got a therapist to talk through that, because there's quite a lot to unpack when it's like, oh yeah, by the way, actually the analogy that a lot of people use is it's like you realize you're a zebra, not just a weird horse. So you're like, all of your life you're like, why am I like
a
I'm
weird
really good
horse
in hot climates but I hate the cold, or like, I don't know, like you're a zebra, you're not a weird horse. So that's kind
so
of the
funny
existential crisis that you have. So so I went to therapy and then found out about ADHD coaching, which is essentially where you work with someone on practical strategies to help you in your life now that you have ADHD. So coaching was really helpful, because basically it's a lot of like looking at like what you need to support you, so like how not to forget your keys, How to be productive at work, how to manage stress levels, like how to use your creativity to help you in other areas of your life and things like that. So it's very much looking at your life with support of someone who understands ADHD to help you to do the things that you want to do. So that was super helpful. I have Tina Squire, she's amazing. And it was just amazing to like talk to someone who gets it.
Yeah.
First of all.
So validating.
Validating, and also like a good ADHD coach kind of tells you things that you already sort of knew but articulates them into words.
So, oh, I love when people can do that. That's a skill, and that's a skill that a lot of writers, like really good writers, don't overcomplicate things. They just conceptualize things and say it in a way that is easy to deliver and be received by the recipient, if that makes sense. Because so many writers overcomplicate things, and it's like, you're not a smart writer for making me struggle to get this, you know? Like, it's so smart to simplify difficult topics, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And especially when, like, with people with ADHD, we'll think about seven different directions at the same time, and then I'll be like, what I'm hearing is you would love more autonomy in your life. And then they're like, oh my God, I hadn't even connected the exercise thing with the work thing with the blah, blah, blah thing. So that was amazing to kind of have that experience. And she said to me a few things that I still come back to kind of in my life and in coaching. The best system is one that you use. So people are often looking for a new system, or I'm going to start Notion, I'm going to be a ClickUp person, I'm going to have the productivity planner. Whereas actually, if you look back at the systems that you actually use, iPhone notes, what's wrong with them?
What helps you is good.
Yeah. So best systems is a system that you can use. Also, she said, it's amazing that you're not too much of a perfectionist and you just give lots of different things a go. Whereas I'd always seen it as like jack of all trades, master of none. I would never be like a marathon runner because I wouldn't run for that long. I'm also physically like not that very athletic, but like I always thought of it as like other people kind of perfect and finish things, whereas I hadn't really thought of it as a strength that I do just give things a go and I do just try things.
Also just feeling like inspired to try new things and like wanting to like broaden your horizons is a massive strength, because some people just never step out of their comfort zone, you know? Like, I think that's such a cool like thing to shine a light on.
Yeah, so that was amazing to kind of just kind of reframe things in like with the knowledge that I have ADHD, so I'm not trying to do things in a way that isn't going to work. Like, I'm not going to try and do the same job for my entire life because that's not going to work, because I need novelty. And actually looking at the neat, like, say, I don't know, like looking at rest came up a lot because I don't really do nothing or relax. But actually looking at that, instead of looking at things like you should rest, be more restful. Like, swimming's fun. Like, it's pretty relaxing. Like, I like knitting. Like, it doesn't matter if I'm doing things when I'm resting, but like just reframing things in it. It's okay to do the things that you do it, and how can you make it more fun for you? So that's kind of what coaching brought to me. And then from that, I was like, wow, okay, this is a career. And also you just get to like find out about really interesting people's lives. So I then also was at a point in my job where I've been working in advertising and media for like 10 years, kind of doing the same thing. Little bit bored of like corporate clients who just wanted pack shots in their social and things like that. So I got to a point also, you know, when you realize that you've become kind of one of those moany people at work and you're like, I don't think that I'm actually adding as much to this as I could elsewhere. So it kind of got to a point where I was like, it's time for me to go. Of course, in ADHD fashion, was also got engaged at the same time, was planning a wedding in the UK, a wedding in Australia, did an ADHD coaching course with Leanne Mascal at ADHD Works, and then also a course in the US called AD.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
So I was studying 4 times a week, planning 2 weddings. This was in my like 3 month period of my job.
I feel like you would have been in your element though. Like you would have been thriving.
Was I? I was not. So my poor partner, I think by the time he got to the wedding, he was like, do I actually want to marry her? Because I was just like very frazzled and like kind of, so I was doing a lot. But this coincided as well, I think, with like starting medication as well. So like when you take ADHD medication for my experience, not a doctor, not a psychiatrist, etc., everyone has a different experience. I was able to concentrate and do more. So I kind of actually took myself to a place of burnout because I was like, finally, I can do all of these things. So let's do all of them.
Yeah, been there. Yeah.
So yeah, so I did that and then did my coach training and then I got married, went on my honeymoon, came back and then started out as a coach.
I'm literally so proud of you. Like, it's so cool that like we were working at the same company and then you left and you just have done all this incredible stuff. And I feel like we've kind of been following each other's journey on social and like we've both been doing so many crazy things. And it's just like, yeah, I find it all really, really inspiring. I'd love to know, how do you stay updated on the latest research? Because I think as someone who got diagnosed with ADHD last year, like you said, once I found out I had it, I was like, right, what now? And I tried to educate myself as much as possible, but there's a lot of misinformation out there. And so there's some good websites that I found, like Attitude, which was like ADDitude.
Yeah,
they were great. There's some good podcasts and stuff. But like, how do you know? Because things like this as well, when things become, I don't want to use the word popular, but when there's a spotlight on things, they do receive more funding. Exhibit A, COVID, billions and billions of dollars cure made in a year. Like, it's kind of like when there's more conversation about things and there is more developments and more research done and they're finding out new things. But I'd love to know, like, what are some actual credible sources that people can go to learn more? And I am literally going to be writing these down and doing them.
Yeah, so what I'll do is I will put a link to a list of them on my website because I've been meaning to do it for ages.
Awesome.
And I think that I probably have a Google Doc somewhere. So Attitude, really, really good. There are some books that I'd recommend. So ADHD 2.0, Edward M. Hallowell and John R. Ratey. It's really thin. It's a paperback. It's really good. Second one is ADHD A to Z by by Leanne Maskell. That is really comprehensive because it's in chapters. So it's like A is for ADHD, B is for burnout, C is for, I don't know all the letters, but that one's I recommend as like, it's good to flick through because if you're like, wow, I'm really stressed, Z is for Zen. So it's like how to not be stressed with ADHD. So that's a really good kind of, like reference point. And then there's also ADHD in Women and Girls by Sari Solden, which is kind of the original book on that. ADHD in Women and Girls by Joanne Steer is really good. So those are the books that I'd recommend. Podcasts. So Is It My ADHD by Grace Timothy, which is about the experience of ADHD in women and other marginalised genders. So that's really great because it comes at it from more of an intersectional perspective, whereas a lot of ADHD research is either from like white men or like a white middle class woman like myself. But it's good to it's so important because everyone comes from different contexts, and obviously, you know, you have a different experience of the world with ADHD, but you'll have another different experience of the world with other intersectionalities, disabilities, race, gender, etc., sexuality. And she has really good guests, and what I really like about it is it's like kind of lots of really interesting people who happen to have ADHD, which I love. And then generally TikTok, there's a lot of people doing, like, if you have these symptoms, you might have ADHD, don't listen to them, go and do your own research, speak to your doctor, look at the criteria and work out what is your kind of ADHD. Because the one thing that I've learned in all of my research is if you have met one person with ADHD, you have met one person with ADHD, and everyone with ADHD is so different. And within that, there's a concept called situational variability, which means that everyone with ADHD is different, but even my ADHD can be different on any given day based on nutrition, hormones, exercise, sleep, all of those things. So the research, like when you see people like everyone with ADHD forgets things, it paints this picture of stupid people who are like really ditzy. And yes, I do forget things, but I'm not stupid. And ADHD has nothing to do with intelligence. And it's important to kind of look at what you look at also with your own critical lens. If you're like, oh my God, this person really gets me, like go for gold with their content. But look at like different sources and remember that, it can be overwhelming. Take breaks. Speak to actual real people. It's a lot.
Yeah, there's so much good advice in there. I'll definitely put links in the episode description to everything that we spoke about. So if you do want to go and check out any of that, please go and have a look in the show notes. I did want to speak to you about the way that ADHD typically impacts relationships and dating dynamics, because obviously this podcast, I look at things through like a dating and relationships lens because it's just something I know a lot about. I've been on far too many dates and it's just something I'm super interested in, and so is my audience. So, and also just personally, like I have moved back to Melbourne. I'm looking at starting getting into dating. The second I open Hinge, I panic and close it, but that's a whole other discussion for another day. How do you think ADHD typically impacts things like dating and relationships?
Yes. So many ways. I'm going to try and make this structured so it's easy to understand.
Please.
First of all, hyperfocus. People with ADHD have interest-based attention systems. So your brain doesn't care what is important, it cares about what is interesting. So when picking a romantic partner, this showed up for me, is I wouldn't care if guys were nice. I would care if they were funny or good looking or interesting to me.
Stimulating in some way.
The judgment of who I was going out with was really bad, because I would be like, they're just, look at that nice guy over there, text me back all the time, boring. I would go after really awful people who were interesting or sexually attractive to me. And having the interest-based attention system means that essentially you might not make the best judgment on creative partners. So that was one thing. Second thing is hyper-focus. So if I'm into a new hobby, for example, like I did triathlons when I was in Melbourne, all I would talk about is triathlons. I'm an enthusiastic person. I get hyper-focused on things. Guys would find that quite terrifying because they'd be like, oh my god, she's so into me, this is weird, like she's so keen, etc. Whereas actually my housemate described it, she was like, you could be that enthusiastic about what you're having for breakfast, they're not special, but it's just having that like hyper focus and general enthusiasm for life and like having that zest for life, men could take that as like, oh my god, she's so into me, that's really weird. Whereas it's actually just it's just a general so general enthusiasm could be taken as like being quite intense, but also on myself, like I would hyper focus, I would be like, right, why hasn't he texted me back immediately, like hyper focused on, like if I was really interested in someone, I would be like, so I went, he's not gonna listen to this, so I went out with this guy in Melbourne who owned like 4 brunch places, and I was like, oh my god, am gonna date this brunch mogul, like I came back at Christmas when I've been in Melbourne for like a month, and I was like, right, so I think I've met the one, he owns 4 brunch restaurants, and I was like, I pictured myself as this brunch queen, but we've I don't know, met like 3 or 4 times, like,
amazing,
it wasn't even like, yeah, we had some bants, but like not super compatible, but I had sold myself for life, so the hyper focus is real in dating.
I find it so confusing that hyper focus is such a huge part of ADHD, but then equally going after 500 million things at the same time that are, you know, all stimulating in different ways is also a huge part of it. Like I find that like if I'll overly invest in a guy or the business that I'm, you know, planning on starting up at the moment, or like I get a new job and like throw myself into it, but then at the same time I'm so easily distracted by like shiny object over there. Do you know what I mean? Like it's like two sides of this same coin. And it's strange because I know you said you meet one person with ADHD and you've met one person because it's all so different, but I find it so confusing that I understand both of those sides to it, you know, like how can you hyper focus on one thing but also be interested in 5 billion other things? Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I do. So I actually, one of my clients wrote this incredible article which I'll share.
Please do.
It was amazing. It's quite long, but she talks about the difference between attention deficit and attention regulation. So when you think about ADHD in the traditional sense, it's talked about like you can't concentrate, whereas actually it's attention regulation. So you can be hyper focused on something for a while, but you can't regulate where your focus goes. Yeah, but you can have many interests, and it's what makes people with ADHD really interesting people to be around, because you never know what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
But it is a hard thing to manage when you kind of have this abundance of enthusiasm or focus for many different things, and then you end up going down the rabbit hole of, for example, researching winter boots when you're actually meant to be sending out a newsletter, for example. So it's kind of, again, like, you can't control what's interesting to yourself versus what's important, but tools that you can use are kind of instead of thinking of like out of sight, out of mind, like put things in front of you that you want to pay attention to. So like throw your phone. I literally physically throw my phone to the other side of the room if I need to focus on something. So like basically putting the thing that you need to focus on in front of you helps to regulate that attention, and also like physical alarms and stuff like that. So I got really into Mario, so I'll set a 10-minute alarm so that I'll do 10 minutes, and then I obviously reset it 3 times, but it means that I'm playing it for 30 minutes instead of 3 hours.
God, I'm doing that with Hogwarts Legacy at the moment. So bad. I'm literally like, we'll play it at lunchtime. I'm like, do not let me work from home. This is so dangerous.
Yeah. Jeremy's like, why is the Switch battery dead? And I'm like, got to level 100. So anyway, what we're talking about is basically regulating attention, and with hyper focus, that attention can be on a romantic interest, which is can be quite intense for that person. But if you meet someone who's also quite into you, then it's amazing, and you can have these really electric relationships that can be short lived and like
burn out quickly,
like a spark club, but then to others then it creates amazing partnerships and amazing friendships as well, because if you find someone that you hyperfocus on and you're like, yes, we're best friends forever, like, you can use that. So yeah, hyperfocus is one thing. Second thing is rejection sensitive dysphoria. So I love neuroscience, and people with ADHD are physically more sensitive and emotionally more sensitive. So this might come up. I hate the big light. I hate loud noises. I wear noise cancelling headphones. Like, I have sensory issues, but it also means that I feel things more deeply, or I will pick up on like certain, they've spoken to me in a different tone. That's weird. They didn't speak to me like that last week.
Oh my God, so I do that all the time.
Person.
Yeah.
And in emotional, like in romantic relationships, this can be really hard to deal with, because we will smell bullshit a mile off. And if someone is previously like been cool with us and then they're not cool with us, we'll be like, oh, I think that you're a bit off of me. And they'll be like, no, I'm not. But like,
yeah,
actually,
and it leads to anxiety as well, because I feel like because we're perceptive of emotions, I'm usually right about that kind of thing. So it's like, if I get a whiff of anything, I'm like, well, I'm probably definitely right. And then people are like, don't be paranoid, don't overthink. People have their own lives, they're not worried about that. But it's like, yeah, but every time I've thought this, I was right. So now I have anxiety.
Yes, and people, and yes, and also people will gaslight you in that, like, I don't know, even friends, like well-meaning friends, oh, I'm sure that I'm sure they're not off with you, but then you'll find out that they are later down the line and that you were right. So it's kind of the balance of like your spidey senses being a bit like, you know, like a cat that's gone fluffy, those are your spidey senses, like versus like a regular person that might be a normal cat. So you'll have these spidey senses that are kind of hyper-vigilant on things being off. And also any kind of perceived rejection can be like physically painful. So like I like say like the job thing, so I literally have cried at work for 3 hours because someone sent me an email saying the numbers were wrong in the report, please correct them. But like, that is because literally it's really hard to deal with. Thank God for working from home. It's like a cry alone in my office instead of in the toilet at work. All jokes aside, basically it means that any kind of criticism, I like to think of it as taking everything fucking personally. So if someone's like, oh, you're a bit loud today, or you're annoying,
I'll be like, how dare you? Oh my God,
I'm never opening my mouth again. I'm the literally most annoying person. And it will send you into the biggest spiral. So that's really hard to deal with. First of all, for the person that is crying for 3 hours over feedback at work, or getting really, really upset if someone cancels plans at the last minute and thinking, oh my God, I really like that guy, we're never going to see each other again, this is awful, he's breaking up with me, blah, blah, blah. So that's really hard to deal with from the sense of the person who's feeling those intense feelings with minor things that in other people's world would be minor. So that's really hard to deal with. It's also really hard to deal with because society is like, you're dramatic, you're too much. And then there's the other layer of shame that goes on top of that. And then it's also hard to deal with because from a romantic partner's perspective, like, Jeremy could be, what did you say to me the other day? Oh, when I come back from being in the office all day, I'd appreciate it if the house wasn't a shit tip and you tidied up a bit after yourself. I took that as like, he's filing for divorce. It's it. Like, what are we doing with our two cats? Like, who's getting Rocky? Who's getting Penny? Like, I was like, he hates me. Like, I try my best. And
I would be the same, fully.
Yeah, but so from his perspective, he's like, I just told him to clear up after herself. Like, when I've been at work all day, this is entirely fair. So it's hard for the partner, or the, especially if you're dating and it's on that weird, like, that
not
weird
sure
kind of
we
seeing
phase.
Each other.
Yeah.
What are we phase?
Yeah.
You can act really dramatically. And basically, if you're dating with someone with ADHD, it's super fun because they'll love you so hard and you'll do loads of fun stuff together, but buckle up because it's a bit of a ride sometimes.
Yeah.
So you need to kind of, you need to have a partner that accepts that, like, the part of you that is really caring and loving and like sensitive to their needs and really perceptive and really like a lovely person is also the part of them that will take everything personally. But it's that kind of communication really helps. And then also RSD with breakups, like, as I said with the job thing, like, I've been so upset when people have ghosted me or broken up with me when I haven't even liked them, just because it's the RSD.
So true. Honestly, like, there was a point in my past relationship when I was thinking, like, the day before I got dumped by surprise, I was like, okay, we're in a long distance relationship. This is so toxic to even admit. But I was like, maybe if I meet someone and then I get a crush on them and then I break up with my boyfriend, I won't have to be sad about it, because I could just migrate straight to the other person. Then the next day he broke up with me. So clearly there was something going on, but I was utterly devastated. I was like, how could this happen? I didn't expect this. Like, I'm so hurt. Like, I was like, I literally felt like I was going to choke and die. And I like just couldn't do anything. And then I thought about it a month later, or like probably a year later, and I was like, the day before I was planning to find another crush to soften the blow for when I broke up with him. Like, I obviously didn't even want to be with him, and I was literally devastated. And I was like, this is so fucked. Like, I just, that's like, I like gaslighted myself into thinking that I liked him way more than I actually even did, and like, we were completely wrong for each other.
This is the classic, like, this is a very ADHD dating story. So yeah. Before I moved to Australia, I was dating someone. This is where it gets to that oversharing part. So it's got to be like 30 minutes in. So before I moved to Australia, I was dating a guy who was really unsuitable. We met at work.
Great.
I had a boyfriend, he had a girlfriend, but like, we were just flying for a while, and then things escalated. And he was just not the boyfriend, but so we started dating each other. Like, you know when you're like in club toilets talking about someone that you're seeing and they're like, seriously, like, so many red flags, but I was like, but I like him. And I thought that I wasn't actually gonna break up with him, because I really liked him and things were going much better. He still didn't spend weekends with me because he went out with the lads every Saturday night, but you know, we'd escalated to Friday nights, so I felt really special. And I think after 6 months of dating, we did say that we were exclusive, and he was considering me becoming his girlfriend, so that was really nice. So you know, we were in a really good place. Gosh, someone who looked like Joe Alwyn just walked past my building. That's so funny, it's not him. But wow, anyway,
so random.
Very ADHD. But so we were dating and I was like, I'm actually not going to break up with this guy because I really like him, but I know that I need to break up with him. So then I moved to Australia because a friend of mine was talking about it, and I was like, you know what, I need to break up with this guy, and if I move to Australia, he's not going to come with me, so that then I'll break up with him.
That is because hilarious. I moved
to Australia.
I literally did that, but went to England. I didn't know how to leave my ex because we're in the same friend group and it seemed too hard, so I literally just moved to England and was like, sorry, bye.
If you need to break, this is a hot dating tip. If you need to break up with someone who you don't think you're going to break up with, just move countries. And there's a working holiday visa scheme that you can go to Australia or come to England if you're in Australia. And that's a really good way of avoiding confrontation and breaking up with someone you don't want to date forever.
And I feel like we're saying this in jest, but seriously works.
Yeah. So I moved from moved to Australia, but I spent a bit of time in America, and was, you know, we weren't dating then because I'd like left, and I was a summer camp counselor. I was, you know, having fun summer camp activities. And then he came out to America to see me as well, like the English ex, and we had this amazing like 2 week holiday where we listened to 1989, Taylor Swift, did a road trip, and it was like super romantic. Amazing. And then I left him at the airport, but it was very much like I'd kind of forgotten that actually the plan was to break up with him all along, and we just kind of elongated it with this like lovely DeLulu summer holiday, summer romance thing.
Amazing.
Just to, you know, make it a bit harder when we did stop talking. Anyway, so then I'd literally moved countries to break up with him. We then had a bit of a summer romance, but like it was over. Like it was over, but we were still talking, of course, because we'd just come back from this holiday. And then about 2 or 3 months later, he was like, oh, I've actually started seeing someone else, so we should stop talking.
Oh.
I was devastated. Like, devastated, like it was the end of the world. But I'd literally moved to Australia to get away from him, and I was knew that he didn't spend weekends with me because he was busy with the lads, and like he was giving me so many crumbs, and I was so devastated. And yeah, it was just one of those typical RSD things where it's like, actually, looking back, I was really devastated that the tables had turned and instead of me breaking up with him, he was then saying, we can't talk anymore. And it was just, we never got out of the woods.
It's the loss of power. And that, to speak in Taylor Swift 1989 terms, you were not out of the woods.
Yeah, we were not out of the woods. And then it was like clean. Like literally it was like, yeah. So that was me. I was like, I can't believe. So
I'm finally clean.
So out of the woods was the, so basically he was so, like the Taylor Swift songs were, I Knew You Were Trouble was 100% how we started dating. Like, I knew our first kiss was like in Shoreditch House, like a work thing. Like it was really bad. I Knew You Were Trouble. And then it was Out of the Woods.
Yep.
Never got out of the woods.
Still in there.
Then it was clean because I was like, by the time I finally let go of him, I was so glad of it. I was like, this is so stupid because he wasn't like, he didn't give me weekends as a girlfriend. Yeah, like, that's who does
like,
that?
That's, and like, you know, the sun, like a Sunday with your boyfriend, best day ever, best day ever. Going, like having a boyfriend, especially in London, having a boyfriend, going to London Fields, going to Broadway Market, having a coffee, little croissant, like Sunday, little roast, lay around the house, like crisp breeze, like sunny day, like Sunday with your boyfriend, best thing ever. He's not giving me Sunday.
We didn't do a lot of daytimes together. It was more of a nighttime thing, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, but, that's a red flag in itself, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's just so many red flags. And when I used to go to his house, then his bathtub was so dirty. He lived with like five guys from Manchester. And basically the like bath, like there was a shower over the bath and like that was white, but like the sides of the bath were like grey. And then you could see footprints of like where, because they, which is so rank. And it was just... Yeah, not the one. But basically what I'm saying is with RSD, like any kind of perceived rejection can be physically painful. And it's like feeling hot and sweaty, feeling sick. Yeah. Like you'll, but the thing is with RSD is it's thankfully it's short lived. So like within a month or so, I was like, wow, that was awful. Or it could be if it's a work thing or someone's cancelled your plans and you're like, I'm never speaking to them again. 48 hours later, you might like, okay, fine, I'll speak to them. They're my best friend, whatever. But like,
this is why I never want to send the text in the moment, because it's like I will say something fucking rude and I'll say how I'm feeling at that time, and then 8 hours go by and I'm like, why did I say
Yeah, so I coach a lot of people on RSD all the time in work situations, in romantic situations, in many situations. There's a couple of strategies. First of all, name it to tame it. So you can be like, wow, this is so upsetting. It could be an RSD thing. I'm not dramatic. I'm not an awful person. This is RSD. It's happening. And it's okay to be really upset about that thing. So don't fight it. Own your feelings. Go for a walk. Journal, whatever you need to do, like don't fight it, and also name it to tame it. So like, okay, this is RSD, I'm having a reaction, this is really awful. Number two, get support. So like phone a friend, send someone a bitchy voice note, like cry for a while, call your work bestie, like don't do it alone. Number three is pause. So like if you can get yourself physically away from your phone if you're going to send that message, sleep on it, physically take yourself away from the situation, go for a walk, like pause, give yourself time so that you can feel your feelings and like then make decisions on what you're going to do. So get support, pause, name it to tame it, like acknowledge that it's happening and don't fight it. It's the hardest thing with ADHD and what if you don't experience it yourself, you can be like, wow, they're really overreacting about that situation, but actually they're having a response to that situation and that's okay. So RSD is a huge thing in relationships, and even like in the dating stage it's specifically bad, especially when you're trying to like not be dramatic and be cool gal. It's so not cool gal to go psycho on someone when they've like not responded to one text, so it's really hard.
Yeah. God, there's been so much great advice in this, and especially in relation to RSD. We're running out of time, but I did have one more question. What would be your best tip in regards to dating with ADHD in general? Like, what would it just be like opening up lines of communication? Like, yeah, I'd just love to know, like, what's your top tip on dating an ADHD?
Be nice to yourself.
Aww.
Because other people aren't always. So, yeah. Like, and I guess it's looking at your, yeah, be nice to yourself. So, like, in dating is hard. Dating with ADHD is harder. And kind of if, you know, you're being ghosted by people or like you're being treated badly, like you can treat yourself well. And that's something that you can do. And also realize that like there is so many positive aspects of dating with ADHD. Like you'll be so honestly, you could, I feel like I could do like with the right person, you could do like the best first dates and will be sparkly. You'll be effervescent. And when you can be your best self, you are like amazing. And it's kind of realizing that you have so much to give and like actually like being a sensitive person means you're really empathetic. You might be super creative with date ideas. You might have hilarious conversations on 100 different things at the same time. Like you are so amazing and kind of focus on like what you do bring. And also just, yeah, ask yourself, do you actually like them or is this hyper focus? What would your friends think of them? Could you imagine going on a 2-week holiday with them? What would they bring? Like if you were at a dinner party with 12 other people, what would they bring to the table? Like actually kind of interrogate, like, do you actually like them beyond they're hot and they're quite funny? A lot of people are hot and quite funny. myself included, hopefully. But people like Mads. But actually kind of interrogate, do you actually like them? And be kind to yourself are probably the two major tips. And also you have to go out with someone who is going to accept the rough with the smooth, that has a bit of a sense of humor about things, and like also kind of can compliment you. Like I would never picture myself with a shy guy, but Jeremy's like, yeah, like actually he's happy not to be the center of attention. Like he loves it when I'm at a party and I'm being hilarious, he's laughing at my jokes. Like he's really happy like when we have people around that I'm like, I don't know, like he'll be like in the kitchen making loads of food and like like he's happy to kind of watch me shine and bring what he brings to the table, which is like very dark humor. And he won't say anything for the whole evening, but then he'll say the funniest thing of the night. Like
yeah, he's that the kind dark of horse.
So yeah, so he's 6'6" as well, so very tall, dark, and handsome. But finding someone who compliments you. He's also super needy, so like I was like, oh my god, like I would never have to worry he would text me back, because he would be texting me before I worried about him texting me back. So
it's finding the person who's right.
A yin and yang situation is good, or someone at least who's like got a sense of humor and can kind of go with the ride. But a quote I read in Glamour magazine of all places is the best friendships are elastic and they will survive the test of time. So if you compare romantic relationships to friendships, like there needs to be elasticity, there needs to be understanding, there needs to be compassion, and there needs to be, you know, like being able to stretch when you've got conflict and not snap. And also be nice to yourself, be compassionate to yourself, and if you're dating someone with ADHD, you're gonna have a fucking great time.
Love it. This was so brilliant, and I can't wait to have you on the podcast again. This has just been so informative, and I feel like when you were saying like in the advice section, like you this, you that, I'm like, she's speaking directly to me right now. Like I am amazing. Like I am good. Like thank you so much. It's been brilliant having you, and I'll definitely have to have you back, because it's just been so much fun and so good to catch up.
Yay, it's been my absolute pleasure, and I'm so excited to listen to this.
I hope you enjoyed my chat with Charlotte. Please let me know if you have any stories or thoughts of your own to share via my socials. See you next week. Peace.
ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.